continue looking, studying the precepts, exploring how they come into our daily lives and how they can help guide us. We should see the precepts as a way to help us keep a well-oriented mind. This was the term Suzuki Roshi used in some talks he gave when he was here. A well-oriented mind. And the well-oriented mind is the mind that sees the actual truth of things, that understands reality. Your true nature, the real you, is always well-oriented. In true nature there is no delusion. So we are always well-oriented when we living according to our true nature. So when we practice with a mind of the precepts, we are living the authentic life, the well-oriented life. So in our school we follow Dogen's understanding of practice. Dogen, as many of you know, was the Japanese monk who established Soto Zen practice in Japan in the 13th century. Dogen's understanding of the practice is not elaborate. If you look at all of the writings of Dogen's talks and try to read them, and try to comprehend them, you say this is very elaborate. As you know, if you've tried. His number of talks was extensive. His writing was very extensive. But his understanding of the practice was not elaborate. It was very simple. There's no technique, no special technique involved in the practice given to us by Dogen. There is simply our determination. For those of you who don't know Dogen's background, he started Buddhist practice, the Tendai practice in Japan very early when he was 12 or 13 years old. There was no Zen practice in Japan at the time. There was Buddhism, but there was no Zen. Tendai is where he went. And after practicing for a while, he had a big question, what they call the great doubt. So in the Tendai practice, they are told you have to sit in meditation with great vigor and for a long time. It's a very hard work. And Tendai also said, everything is inherently enlightened. And after a while, Dogen said, wait a minute. If we are all inherently enlightened, why do we have to work so hard with all this sitting and all this ascetic practice if we're already enlightened? Why don't we just understand it? And his Tendai teachers at the time were confounded by his question. And they said, we don't know. We don't know the answer. You're going to have to travel to China to see the Zen people. Maybe they know. So he did undertake a very long and difficult journey to China to see the Zen people. And after a number of years, 4 years or so, he returned to Japan with a kind of radical view of meditation practice, not at all what everybody thought it was. Let me read you a little bit of his very first lecture when he got back to Japan. This is known as Fukan Zazenji, or Universally Recommended Instructions for Zazen. So he says, for practicing Zen, a quiet room is suitable. Eat and drink moderately. Put aside all involvements and suspend all affairs. Do not think good or bad. Do not judge true or false. Give up the operations of mind, intellect, and consciousness. Stop measuring with thoughts, ideas, and views. Have no designs on becoming a Buddha. Put aside the intellectual practice of investigating words and chasing phrases, and learn to take the backward step that turns the light and shines it inward. Body and mind of themselves will drop off and your original face will manifest. If you want to realize such, get to work on such right now. The Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. So this is a small part of what Fukan Zazenji was. It's kind of subtle, and it's not very exciting. And there's nothing fancy about it at all. But what it means is to be alive completely in each moment, without any mental or emotional distraction. And when we follow these instructions, we are following the precepts. The precepts, the 10 precepts in Buddhism, are a picture of our original nature. They express the unity of the entire universe. And when we understand that, then we know how to do things completely, without compromise and without a shortcut. And that includes doing the things that we don't like to do, and especially doing the things we don't like to do. So doing things completely, without emphasizing ourself, is the only way we can be happy with our life, and the only way we can find satisfaction beyond ideas of satisfaction. This is how we understand the precepts. Here at Kanando, we view the precepts two ways rather than just one way. The first way is the usual traditional way of understanding the Buddha's precepts or Ten Commandments. They are seen as an admonition to avoid doing something, a prohibition. Don't do this. This is the usual way of seeing the precept. Don't do this. And it's a way of saying to us, stay clean from defilements, stay free of karma, don't do this, stay clean. But we here at Kanado, we see the precepts in another way, second way, where we emphasize the creative possibilities of human nature. Not just what we shouldn't do, but what can we make of it. So, the sixth precept is an admonition, a prohibition. It says, no dwelling on past mistakes. No dwelling on past mistakes. And this is not about, it doesn't mean don't feel guilty, and it doesn't mean don't feel remorse. It means accept your past mistake as a mistake. And let that acceptance provide you with humility and optimism. Accept your past mistake as a mistake, not as a basic flaw in your human nature. Accept your mistake as a mistake. Accepting it brings humility, and just leaving it as a mistake rather than an earth-shattering flaw in your character brings optimism. So that's the first way of looking at the sixth precept, the prohibitive way. The second way, the more positive version that we like to consider here, in our practice, we say creating wisdom from ignorance. Creating wisdom from ignorance. Creating wisdom means how we recognize the ways in which we create delusions, the ways in which we create mistakes. When we create wisdom from ignorance, we transform our delusion and we transform our mistake from negative to positive. In other words, we see things as they are, and that brings us freedom and liberation. So this precept, no dwelling on past mistakes, means don't cling to your old delusions. In other words, don't fool yourself, or stop fooling yourself. Don't fool yourself. Otherwise, you will live in a realm of stubbornness. For us, for anybody, the hard part of this admonition is to recognize our delusions in the midst of active and very busy lives. We are so busy these days in our lives. We say, who has time? Who has time to study delusions? I'm too busy trying to get things done, trying to keep even. So it's difficult to recognize our delusion in the midst of this frantic world. So this is where our practice comes in. This is where we need to engage in mindfulness continuously. we need to continue our practice without a break. And this is how we learn to make effort in our life and to feel continuously connected with each other and with the world we live in, to feel continuously connected. The Buddhist term delusion looks like it applies to all of the precepts, not just the sixth precept. It applies to all the precepts. The fundamental meaning of a delusion is not seeing things as they are. Not seeing that things are in reality not permanent and lack a core essence and a temporary and transient. Delusion means not seeing things as they are with those characteristics. So Dogen said, we practice in the midst of delusion. We practice in the midst of delusion. And this is the meaning of the positive version of the precept, creating wisdom from ignorance. We practice in the midst of delusion, continually converting our delusion and our ignorance into wisdom through our continuous determined practice. So the seventh precept, admonition version of the seventh precept says, no praising yourself or blaming others. The positive version of that precept is maintaining modesty, extolling others. So you can recognize that this precept, where we avoid praising ourselves or blaming others, this precept is about ego. The ego is always, the ego always feels diminished. The ego never feels complete. This is the definition of ego. If we felt complete in ourselves, if we felt complete in our life, there would be no ego. So the ego is never satisfied. Always praising itself. Always finding fault with others. The ego always wants to be bigger. Ego always wants more and is always jealous of others. You know, she has what I want. He has what I want. It is the ego that feels the need to look better than someone else or blame others for its own perceived lack of something. So the seventh precept says, don't praise yourself and don't blame others. Maintain modesty and extol others. So the ego is a product of misunderstanding we have about our life. Because inherently, we don't lack anything. for the ego to want more or want something in addition or to want to feel bigger is total misunderstanding, because inherently we are 100% complete, just as we are. So in reality there is no justification for feeling diminished. It is a misunderstanding. So the seventh precept says, you have to break that habit. And our practice tells us, Dogen tells us, without your practice, you are in danger of seeing your life through ego, which is a misunderstanding of who you are. When you misunderstand your nature, you will be deluded into feeling incomplete and diminished. So when our ego is a little bit too active, we separate ourselves from each other. And that is a certain way to find unhappiness. That is not the way to feel satisfaction with our life, to separate from others. So the seventh precept emphasizes others. And tells us to take the emphasis off our small self. And the eighth precept says, no hoarding the teaching or materials. No hoarding the teaching or materials. And the creative side of that is sharing understanding and freely giving of self. And so in our life, we cannot do things completely if we are attached or hold on to something or to someone or to an idea. And that's the message of Fukan Zazenji. So why do we become attached and stubbornly hold on to ideas or to our desires? Because we have fear of letting go of the idea of ourself. Here's the ego again. So if we follow the eighth precept in our life, we find freedom. Freedom from fear. No hoarding the teaching or materials. Sharing understanding, freely giving of self. This freedom, freely giving the self, there's no fear. When we freely give ourselves to each other, no fear. And there is freedom in that. So, when we attach to things or to people or to ideas, idea of ourself, we are emphasizing, we are trying to satisfy our small self. And this is a big misunderstanding. This is the big delusion that our practice tries to transform. When we emphasize satisfying our small self, the limited concept of who we think we are, we see ourself as separate, a separate individual in this world. And that is an incomplete picture of our life, seeing ourselves as separate. That is an incomplete picture of our life. And that, if that continues, it provides a lifetime of dissatisfaction. So if our desire does not diminish, if our desire seems to have no limits, we won't be able to share ourselves with each other. We will want more than others have. And that only leads to separation and competition and fighting. That's an unhappy life. So, giving, a mind of giving, is our inherent and fundamental way of life. So the precept says, no hoarding, freely giving. Live according to your true nature. And if we don't live according to this precept, our life feels empty and we are never satisfied. So we practice the precepts to have a well-oriented mind. And when we do, we will be keeping the precepts very naturally, without much effort, with hardly any effort at all. They will just unfold spontaneously and naturally in our life when we practice with well-oriented mind. Does anyone have a question tonight? Yes, Steve.
Yes, in the eighth precept, you talked about hoarding of or clinging to things and people and ideas. But the way that it was phrased in at least this English translation of the eighth precept is no hoarding of the teachings. It sounds as though it's talking about the Dharma. So I'm kind of confused about what that would mean, hoarding of the Dharma, or if that's even what it means.
So, if we were to keep to ourselves what we learn and what we understand, if we hoard such things, if we do it for a personal advantage, this will not provide satisfaction. So the precept says, don't hold back teaching, whether it's the Dharma or whether it's your own insight or your own knowledge. If you hold back such things or hold back material things of the world, it's a mistake. So the other side of it says, share your understanding and give of yourself. So the precept means don't hoard anything. Don't keep for yourself. Store it back there. Keep everybody away from what you have. Don't do that. You separate yourself from others. Yes, please.
Well, quick, no. So, my question is impermanence, and you know our desire to want to hang on to things. Even our own ego, is it caused by the fact that we fundamentally don't want to accept that our life as we know it is very short and very brief? And will be over very quickly, right? I mean, our life doesn't last that long in the form that we currently have. And so we try to hang on to things to deny that, to deny that understanding that one day this will be all over. And all these ideas that we think we have about what our life is will be gone as well. And it's kind of a hard thing to accept.
Even if we were to live to be 1,000, we would still say it's too short. It's you're correct. We say, "Oh, life is too short." But that's a very limited understanding of what our life is. That's just. Our life is simply the temporary manifestation of something much bigger. And if we don't get in touch with the much bigger, then we have the problem. Then we have the suffering of so-called short life. So if we have a friend or relative, a loved one, who dies at an early age, and we have another friend or relative who lives, to 120, both are okay. One is not better than the other. Those are different examples about how this vast being expressed itself. So that's why we chanted earlier tonight. We finished our chant. What is the word? What are the words? One who achieves the way will be freed from the duality of birth and death. The duality. But there is no duality. It's just our mind that makes a duality. So you're correct. Until we understand why we say life is short, and I want to hold on. Until we understand why we say that, we will be confused and uneasy. And so we practice to find that understanding. Thank you.
Just kind of feels me, I don't know, I just feel it is negative. How can you not care? We are connected to each other. For example, somebody says, I said what is the truth, and I said what I felt like. I don't care how it was received, or the person felt hurt, or the BP went high. I don't know whether this is ego or whether, I don't know what precept, following what precept is important in this. Something happens to me when somebody says, I don't care.
What happens to you?
I feel there is something wrong in hearing I don't care. It's
so how do you respond to that feeling?
I just cannot respond, because hearing somebody says I don't care just kind of stops my brain to do anything or respond.
Uh-huh.
I just feel they decided to get disconnected. So there's no point.
Can you help them feel connected?
I try. If they're trying to say something and the first line was I don't care, I just stop my brain from listening to the next things, because I just try to tell, you have to care.
Well, how we respond to someone or something that we feel goes against our original nature, how we respond is important. How we try to create something positive out of that negative feeling. How to try to encourage caring when it appears not to exist. This is our work. How to try to encourage caring. So each of us has to understand the best way for each of us to do that. So if we are faced with this, I don't care, and it seems to push us away, we have to find a way to approach it and not be pushed away. And that's hard work. That's hard work.